competition, who missed whom more. I described my bathrobe-encased moping. He countered with the fact that he let Zeb take him to karaoke night at the cellar to sing sad breakup songs, including There's a Tear in My Beer. I told him about my evening of drinking with Dick, carefully omitting the bar fight for Dick's sake. Gabriel confessed to keeping one of my t-shirts in bed with him so he could smell me while he slept. You are now officially a 16-year-old girl, I giggled, stroking his back. Wait a minute. What did you do with the panties you stole in the alley?
It's best we don't discuss that, he said, nuzzling my collarbone. We've already established that I missed you more than you missed me. Let's leave it at that. I am the truly pathetic winner.
I wouldn't call it winning, per se, I said, shaking my head. But I think I have you beat.
What can be more pathetic than sexually objectifying your New Kids on the Block t-shirt?
He asked, arching a brow. I rolled, letting his weight pin me pleasantly against the mattress as I held his face over mine. My body craved you so much that I couldn't sleep for all the sex dreams I was having. Full color, surround sound, waking up in the middle of multiple orgasm extravaganzas that tortured me every single night. I didn't know whether to be angry at my subconscious for not being able to let you go, or grateful that I was able to hold on to you even in that empty, barely satisfying way. Gabriel's mouth went slack, and I think I heard his brain shatter like glass. He wheezed.
Tell me.
I launched into detailed descriptions of my dreams because I figured, why suffer alone? I told him about what was basically a reimagining of my losing my virginity in college, only it was Gabriel hiking me up against the stacks of the Russian folklore section of the university library. And we ended up christening the special collections room as well as the reference section. He groaned when I told him about the one where he was my boss and I had to be disciplined against his desk for improperly filing a report. I recounted the scenario involving him and a pint of chocolate overload ice cream, just to be mean. When I got to the Victorian dream, I left out the bloodier, upsetting aspects to focus on the setting and the fancy clothes. I stumbled over the, oral exam because I was new to the dirty talk and couldn't seem to find the balance between sexy dirty and gross dirty. Seriously, naughty Jane can only keep up the facade for so long.
Don't stop now, Gabriel said, his eyes dark and slightly unfocused. I'd like to know how this one ends.
It's a little embarrassing, I confessed, suddenly wanting the bed to open up and swallow me. I'd gone from wet and ready temptress to stuttering novice in 3 seconds flat. If I could have blushed, my face would have lit up like a flame. I will say that you kissed me somewhere that you've never kissed me before.
Like in the back seat of a car?
He asked, his tone teasing. Yes, you kissed my Honda. I snickered, slapping at his shoulder as he spread kisses in the valley between my breasts, the little dip in my belly button. When he nudged the tip of his nose to the lace waistband of my panties, my hips bucked up from the bed. What are you doing?
I told you. I want to know how this one ends, he said, peeling my underwear away.
I let out a slow, jittery breath as the cool air hit my damp, trickling flesh. I made a noise between a yelp and a sigh when Gabriel's tongue made that first long, achingly slow slide against me. Gabriel murmured,
How will we know if the dream was accurate unless we play it out?
My hips bucked up, pressing me against his mouth as his lips danced across my center. His hands slipped under my butt and lifted me closer, my legs slipping over his back. He nipped and kissed and teased while my body pitched. Hot spikes of pleasure coiled in my belly, stretching each nerve until every stroke of his mouth was almost painful. And just like my dream, the moment the tip of his tongue flicked at that little elusive pearl of nerves, I came, howling. Pushing my thighs apart and settling between them, Gabriel slid up the length of my body, kissing and nipping until he reached my mouth. As his tongue, still tasting of my own arousal, swept into my mouth, he filled me to the hilt. Whatever breath we had left was released in one long sigh. He spread my knees wide, tucking my ankles around the small of his back as he withdrew. I whimpered just as he snapped his hips and drove deeper. He brought me to my peak over and over and then pulled back, drawing out our release. I lost track of time, of rhythm, of anything but the delicious friction. Gabriel brushed his lips over my closed eyelids.
My eyelids fluttered open as his fangs peeked over his lips. He smiled, bending his head to my throat and delicately scraping his sharp teeth against my skin. I arched my neck. He sank his fangs into my skin, drawing blood to the wound with insistent, gentle pressure. I turned my head toward the palm cupping my face, biting down on the skin just below his wrist as his movements became more frantic. He gasped as I swallowed the first mouthful of blood. The connection, the flow of blood, seemed to open up some little window between us. I'd never caught so much as a hint of what Gabriel was thinking before. And now I could feel everything he felt. The love he had for me, his relief at being able to touch me again, the pleasure I was giving him. It was all laid open for me. And when I thought, "I love you too," he gasped again as if he heard me. The thought sent him toppling over the edge and dragged me with him. In my head, the lesser, dream version of Gabriel was sent packing with his stupid tuxedo jacket thrown after him. Chapter 13. There comes a time to accept that some relationship patterns will never change. The problem with being a vampire is that it can take hundreds of years for that time to come. Love Bites, A Female Vampire's Guide to Less Destructive Relationships. Mama had outdone herself. With little effort or prompting on my part, my mother had pulled together a baby shower that would have made Martha Stewart turn chartreuse with envy.
"Oh, my,"
Jolene sighed as I helped her waddle through the front door of my parents' house. Since the ultrasounds had been unclear as far as the twins' gender, Mom had kept things charmingly gender-neutral. A hand-sewn banner shouting, "Congratulations!" in appliqued pink and blue letters hung over the foyer table. On the table, guests could sign in by autographing a little baby album for Jolene and offering her an invaluable piece of parenting wisdom. To our left, the parlor's chairs were arranged in a circle around a small pile of beautifully wrapped presents. A clothesline was strung on one side of the room, artfully hung with little gender-neutral baby outfits, matching socks, and hats I knew Mama wouldn't have been able to resist buying for the twins. To our right, Mama had dressed the dining table with little votives of wildflowers between plates of rattle-shaped cookies and candy-colored pettifours.
"It's all so beautiful," Jolene sighed again. "And no one's naked."
"Well, if that's not a baby shower prerequisite, it should be," I said, shuddering as Mama came into the dining room with a huge bowl of her special strawberry shower punch. I groaned. Every Southern woman prides herself on her own special shower punch recipe, whether it's combining lime sherbet and ginger ale, or creating a frozen ring of pulverized pineapple in a bundt pan and letting it slowly melt in a punch bowl full of orange juice. Mama had never revealed her secret punch formula to me. Personally, I'd never understood the appeal of combining bizarre ingredients in unnecessarily complicated ways when popping the top of a Coke can was so much easier. That's probably why I wasn't in charge of the shower.
"Oh, Mrs. Jameson, it's so... thank you,"
Jolene sniffled, throwing her arms around Mama's neck. Mama, who was not familiar with werewolf strength, winced in Jolene's grip but patted her on the back.
"Oh, honey, I'm happy to do it. Zeb means a lot to John and me. That means you do, too," she said, gently peeling Jolene's arms away so she could breathe.
"Now, Jane said you had a pretty hearty appetite lately, so I made you a little snack to pick at before everybody gets here. Why don't you go make yourself at home in the kitchen?"
I arched an eyebrow as Jolene followed her nose into the kitchen. Through the door, I heard her squeal,
"She baked me a ham!"
"Zeb told me Jolene could go through a lot of food," Mama said, carefully placing the punch bowl on the table. "You sure do have an interesting group of friends, sweetheart."
"Thank you, Mama," I said, kissing her cheek. "Really, it's beautiful. Hey, what did you mean by everybody? It's just going to be me, Gabriel, Dick, Andrea, you guys, Aunt Jenny, and Mr. Wainwright. You've put together a gorgeous spread for a bunch of people who don't eat." Both Jolene's and Zeb's relatives were conspicuously absent from the guest list. I think we can all agree that was for the best.
"I may have invited a few more people," Mama said.
There are a lot of parents who know Zeb from school, people my age who knew him when he was little, who want to help him celebrate the babies. Plus, I may have sent invitations to all your aunts and cousins, making it sound like Jolene was somehow related to them.
Mama?
Well, I had to go to all their showers and their daughter's showers, she huffed, looking slightly embarrassed. And you're not going to need one, so I'm calling in all your chips for Jolene. No one can remember half of the names in this family anyway. They'll show up, give her a present, and walk away thinking they've done their duty for a distant relation.
That's, I laughed, actually kind of brilliant.
I underestimate you.
Constantly,
Mama told me. Now, I don't want you to worry about the boys. Your daddy's got a card table set up out back with enough beer and poker chips to keep them entertained for hours. He's actually pretty excited about spending some time with Dick and Gabriel. He has this list with all kinds of questions about the Civil War. And I'm so glad you and Gabriel have come to your senses, honey. You're perfect for each other. All you have to do now is get him to put that ring on your finger.
Mama, I'm not legally allowed to get married, I told her. There wouldn't be much point in our getting engaged.
Honey, I know this is a sore subject. I would just feel better if I knew you were settled.
Mama, I'm going to live forever, and so is my boyfriend. I think that's about as settled as you could expect, considering the circumstances.
Mama considered that for a moment and seemed satisfied. Besides, I think we have a more immediate problem. As much as I appreciate you planning this expanded shindig for Jolene, what are we going to do about the extra guests? What if people don't want me around because of the undead issue? This would be the first time I've seen a lot of aunts and cousins since... Oh, wait. Is Grandma Ruthie coming?
I decided it was best not to invite your grandma, Mama said, carefully adjusting the folds of a chair cover.
And, honey, if anybody has a problem with you being here, they can get the hell out of my house.
I blinked back the mysterious moisture gathering at the corners of my eyes.
Thanks, Mama.
Who's ready for some Texas Hold'em? Daddy boomed as he came downstairs in his silly translucent green dealer's visor. It went well with his lucky rainbow suspenders. Dick was going to eat my father alive.
You guys aren't playing for money, right? I asked.
I will admit to sweating a little when the doorbell rang. The first guest to arrive was Iris Bodine, a distant relative of one of my step-grandpas and an avid band mom when Zeb and I were in the Marching Howler band. She handed Jolene a case of diapers and told her what a catch she'd snagged.
Zeb was always good to my Jessica, even when she was going through her awkward phase,
Mrs. Bodine said of her daughter, who had developed debilitating acne our sophomore year.
He was kind, even when it would have been a lot easier not to be. He's going to be a wonderful father.
Jolene beamed at her. Nina Tipton, whose rambunctious twins had made Zeb's life hell his first year of teaching, almost cried when she talked about Zeb's patience with them.
A lot of teachers would have just washed their hands of my boys, especially after the clown incident. But your husband worked and worked until they were able to sit still for a whole day without punching or kicking or trying out new wrestling moves. They would have been expelled from elementary school if it wasn't for Zeb Lavelle.
And on it went. It was a shame that Zeb couldn't hear these testimonials as he was sequestered on the back porch. An avid fan of the gambler movies, Daddy was doing his best riverboat dealer shtick for Dick, Gabriel, Zeb, and Mr. Wainwright. I frequently snuck to the back window to check on the menfolk. Mr. Wainwright seemed to be floating silently behind Gabriel, giving Dick clues about Gabriel's hand. I sent Aunt Jetty outside to even the playing field. So far, I'd managed to stay under the radar, helping Andrea keep the plates filled while Mama handled hosting duties. The guests I did come across didn't seem surprised or alarmed to see me. Well, my cousin Junie was making it a point not to speak to me, but that had far more to do with my discussing her stripping career near a microphone at a family funeral the year before than any vampire issues.
"Janie, honey, how have you been?"
asked Laura Lee Warner, who worked with Mama at A Stitch in Time. Laura Lee's usual mode at any party was to camp next to the buffet and watch the proceedings from there.
She was a fan of tiny food she didn't have to cook herself. I lifted an eyebrow and searched for potential double meanings in Laura Lee's words. I couldn't find any. I'm fine, Miss Laura Lee. How are you?
Oh, my hair's grayer and my butt's bigger, but what else is new?
She snorted.
You know, your mama told me about your, big changes that you've been going through.
I could only imagine what Mama and Laura Lee talked about while trapped in the quilt shop for hours. On Mama's frustrated days, I doubted I came across in a flattering light.
I'm sure she did. You know, my sister's boy, Jason, he was turned last year,
she sighed.
But it turned out to be the best thing for him. He actually had to think about what he did before he did it. Was it safe for him to leave the house? Did he have enough blood to get him through the week? Was he talking smart to a vampire who was older and stronger than he was? He had to do a lot of growing up. He's almost tolerable to be around now.
Well, there's something to strive for, I muttered.
Your friend, Jolene,
Laura Lee said quietly.
She's not quite human either, is she?
Please don't tell anybody, I whispered, looking to see if the other guests overheard her. They were far too engrossed in Jolene's opening what appeared to be a vibrating musical baby swing with 5 speeds.
Oh, honey, I don't care,
Laura Lee said.
The way I see it, you vampires and whatever Jolene is, you're just making things more interesting for the rest of us. Are there any more sausage balls?
And with that dizzying change of subject, the conversation was over. No one in this crowd, it seemed, cared that I was a vampire. These were people who had known me since the day I was born. Their children had attended my birthday parties. They'd attended all of my step-grandpa's funerals. Being with them now was no different from when I was a human. As long as I kept the frothy punch flowing, I was welcome. Now, that wasn't to say that I would be welcome in any crowd. There was a good chance that for the next 50 years, I would walk into any conversation with a human who knew me before I was turned, expecting some sort of insult or rejection, which was a result of my own neurotic nature, really. Humans were neither all good nor all bad, and just as my interactions with vampires, I would have to approach each one of them on a case-by-case basis. The fact that it had taken me this long to come to this stunning conclusion made me a little sad. I wiped my hands on a tea towel and made my way over to Jolene, who was cooing over the double bassinet Andrea and Dick had given her.
Dick wanted to buy you a breast pump,
Andrea snorted.
I learned never to take him into a baby store. Ever. He snickered every time he heard the word nipple.
Well, that's what you get for dating a giant 12-year-old, I told her, sitting on Jolene's left.
Oh, honey, they're all that way,
my mother's best friend, Carol Ann Riley, told me in a world-weary tone.
Look who's all smug and secure now that she's made up with her boyfriend, Jolene said.
My boyfriend is more of a giant 14-year-old, I muttered, just as emotionally immature but somehow more dangerous.
Oh, honey, they're all that way, too, Carol Ann assured me again.
It was far from the small family shower I had planned, but Jolene was positively glowing with every exchange. We cooed and awed appropriately over every little outfit, crib sheet, and stuffed animal. Hell, I got a little emotional over Jolene's shiny new wipes warmer. By the end of the evening, my relatives were convinced that they remembered Jolene from family reunions when she was a little girl. She was invited to join several Mommy and Me groups and a sewing circle. Mama considered her baby shower-related social debts settled. The boys were allowed back into the house after the ladies left, trailing cigar smoke and chip crumbs in their wake. Considering what Gabriel and I had been up to, I fully expected to burst into embarrassed flames at being in the same room with both him and my father. Let's just say that we'd spent several evenings experimenting, and we'd figured out that I could read Gabriel's mind if I was drinking his blood during exactly the right moment during sex. Unfortunately, his thoughts tended toward the possessive, grunty male part of his personality. We were still working on deeper, more meaningful communication, hence the spontaneous combustion of parental shame.
I focused on helping Mama with the dirty dish patrol. The heavily pregnant Jolene, despite having eaten her weight in sausage balls during the shower, tucked into a heaping bowl of ice cream and Canadian bacon. Daddy, Andrea, and Zeb made a furtive grab at whatever food Jolene hadn't claimed. When Daddy finally took a break from grilling Dick and Gabriel about their 19th-century childhoods, Gabriel took Dick into the parlor and handed him a little leather portfolio containing the deed to the Cheney family manse. Considering that they'd spent the evening gambling, I took this as a bad sign. But it seemed to be something that Gabriel had been thinking about for a long time.
"I want you to have it back," he told Dick. "There's no way I can ever really repay you for being the kind of friend Jane needed, but I can give you this."
"I can't," Dick protested. "You know what that bet cost us. To take it back now would just make it all pointless."
"Not to be rude, but it was all pointless," I noted from across the room. Four eyes narrowed at me.
"What? I said not to be rude. That's like saying, 'God bless them,' right after you say bad things about someone. It means it doesn't count."
"What are they talking about?"
Daddy whispered, clearly fascinated. "Did Dick win at cards tonight?" I asked Daddy. Daddy nodded. "Well, he tended to play drunk when he and Gabriel were human, so he usually lost. Dick lost his family's house to Gabriel. The pair of them are so stubborn that it's taken them this long to get over it."
"Wow."
Daddy couldn't have been happier than a desperate housewife watching her favorite stories. Gabriel cleared his throat. I had the good sense to seem sheepish and mouth,
"Love you." "After all you've done for Jane, it's the least I can do," Gabriel said, pressing the portfolio into Dick's hand.
"I don't know what to say, son. I'm sorry we let it get this far. I've missed having you around the last 100 or so years,
Dick said, looking the most human he had since I'd met him. He looked younger somehow, more vulnerable. He took the portfolio, but then looked up, his eyes pleading.
"Can I still irritate the hell out of you?"
"I don't know what I would do if you didn't," Gabriel said honestly. "I think you would sicken and die."
They shook hands and gave each other manly punches on the arm. Dick announced to Andrea that they were moving up in the world, to a deluxe antebellum home that she could redecorate to her heart's content. Then he lovingly fed her a deviled egg. Andrea blushed, especially when Dick tried to kiss her afterward. Deviled eggs are not a sexy food.
"Does this mean that we're going to be double dating now?" I asked.
Andrea rolled her eyes. Gabriel's grin was wicked.
"Yes, because I think it's only fair that since Dick got my girlfriend into a bar fight, I should be able to take his girlfriend out on the town and put her in danger while he watches. Maybe we can go to a biker convention."
Dick growled. "Hey, Jane fared better in that fight than I did."
"I thought you weren't involved in the fight with Walter," Gabriel said, his brow furrowed.
"Not that one. The other one, with Todd. The one
you don't know about?" Dick grimaced. "Crap."
"You got her into another bar fight?" Gabriel exclaimed. "You were supposed to be looking out for her, not putting her in harm's way. That's it. Dick, Jane, from now on, all of your playdates are supervised. Andrea, sweetheart, I'm taking you skydiving. It's only fair."
Daddy laughed and headed into the kitchen for another round of beers. Andrea climbed into Dick's lap and suggested alternate activities such as bull riding, swimming the Ohio during peak barge traffic, motocross racing without helmets, and letting me cook for her. Dick's scowl grew deeper with each suggestion. Having finished the world's most disgusting Sunday, Jolene was propped up against Zeb's side, both of their hands gravitating to her enormous belly. Jetty was distracted from inventorying Jolene's loot with a fond pat on the cheek from Mr. Wainwright. I had a family that loved me, without judgment, without reserve. And my parents had somehow fallen right into this motley crew and were enjoying themselves. Sure, there were blood relatives out there who couldn't stand the sight of me, but I could fall back on these people. They would fight for me, kiss my boo-boos, take me out for tequila shooters when life got me down. I didn't need more than that. All was right with my world. So it made sense that my Grandma Ruthie chose this moment to come storming through the door.
"Jane Enid Jameson,"
she thundered, slamming the door behind her. Grandma was in a fine froth, her snowy white hair frazzled and her cheeks flushed. She was dressed in a pink and orange plaid pantsuit, the kind of thing that would send Aunt Jetty into a giggle fit when she was living. Apparently, it worked its wonders after death, too, because my ghostly aunt was laughing her invisible ass off. And she wasn't alone.
"Enid?"
Dick snickered. I ignored Dick's low laughter as Grandma screeched,
"How could you embarrass your sister that way? She told me what you did at the Chamber of Commerce meeting. How could you? You know how important her public image is with this new business she's starting. How dare you attempt to sabotage her by telling prominent members of our community that she's..."
"Related to me?" I tried to keep my voice calm as I said, "Grandma Ruthie, as you can see, I have guests. Maybe we can have this discussion at another time."
"Don't you tell me when and where I can talk to you, young lady,"
she yelled.
"This is your mother's house. I'll come and go as I please."
"Mama, what is all this fuss about?" my mother asked as she came out of the kitchen. "Just calm down."
"Don't tell me to calm down, Sherry," Grandma Ruthie snapped. "It's bad enough that you've continued to let Jane into your home, but now you're letting her drag her undesirables into your living room, hosting parties for them. This foolishness has gone on long enough."
"Don't talk like that in front of my friends," I told my grandmother.
"Oh, don't mind us,"
Jolene said, transfixed by the family feud unfolding in front of her. I'm sure it was a novelty for her, considering that most McLean family disputes ended in both parties phasing and proving their werewolf fighting skills, usually naked.
"These are your friends?"
Grandma Ruthie sneered, observing my motley group, my chosen family.
"These are the type of people you spend time with under your great-great-grandfather's roof?"
"Watch it, Grandma," I warned her, seeing the expression of insult on Andrea's face. Dick, on the other hand, was used to that sort of comment and remained unperturbed.
"Now let's all just calm down,"
Mama said in a different tone from the one she normally used during these confrontations. She wasn't trying to placate Grandma. She was just trying to keep us from coming to blows in her parlor. That was weird. Grandma drew herself up to her full height and used her matriarch voice.
"I will speak my mind, Jane."
"Well, then, you'll speak it in the kitchen." I put my hand under Grandma's elbow and not quite gently led her through the kitchen's swinging door. Mama warned,
"Now, Jane, be careful."
"Mama, I'm not going to hurt her," I sighed.
"No, no, I know that," Mama assured me. "It's just that all of my nice dishes are sitting out on the counter. Try not to break anything."
I barked out a laugh. "Mama?" "Oh, she's had it coming for years," Daddy told me. "Your mama's just not ready to do it herself yet."
"I'm working on it," Mama promised. "She can't keep talking to you that way. I've let it go on for far too long. Maybe if I'd stood up to her years ago, we'd have a better relationship. You and I might have had a better relationship. I'm trying to set some boundaries with her, honey, but she's so old, and I'm so..."
"Scared of her?" I suggested. Mama nodded.
"Give her hell, baby."
That said, I squared my shoulders and marched into the kitchen to face off with my tiny septuagenarian foe. "Be as rude to me as you like," I told her, "but don't ever insult the people in that room in my presence. Do you understand me?"
"Don't you talk to me that way,"
Grandma snapped.
"You were raised to have respect for your elders, Jane."
"I was raised to have respect for people who show respect to me. That's something you have never done. Now why don't you go home to your half-dead fiancé and let me and Jenny figure out our issues for ourselves?" Grandma stamped her size 6 orthopedic shoe.
"You will apologize to your sister, Jane, and you will end this foolishness with the lawsuit and give Jenny her share of the early legacy. I command it."
I goggled at the raging geriatric before me,
and then burst out laughing so loudly that Gabriel stuck his head through the doorway to check on me. I waved him away as I leaned against the counter for support and let the bloody tears roll down my cheeks.
I'm sorry, I said, giggling. Did you just command me to do something? Have we met? Has that ever worked for you?
Jenny got her share of the early legacy. She took it out of the house one piece at a time without asking, and so did you. You've been smuggling valuables out of that house since Aunt Jetty's funeral. Don't pretend otherwise.
Let me tell you something about your precious Aunt Jetty,
Grandma spat. In the corner of my eye, I could see Aunt Jetty squinting at the dry erase marker Mama kept on her refrigerator. She grasped it and began to scrawl on the front of the fridge. Ruthie's face froze in horror as an invisible hand eked out,
Ruthie, this is Jetty. I need to tell you you've gotten fat. Jane, I don't know how you're doing that, but stop it. It's morbid,
Grandma scolded, her face paling. I'm not doing it, I said. I'm telepathic, not telekinetic. Aunt Jetty, maybe you shouldn't. Aunt Jetty winked at me.
Honey, she's had this coming for years. Jane, stop that right now,
Grandma yelled as Jetty called her a natural brunette, underlining natural 3 times. It's not me, it's Jetty, I said. She's been haunting the house ever since she died. I wasn't able to see her until I was turned.
Of all the sick jokes,
Grandma Ruthie spat.
How dare you use my sister's memory this way?
Oh, come on. You can believe in vampires, but not in ghosts? Grandma Ruthie sneered at me. I sighed. What if I told you something that only Jetty would know? I asked as Jetty leaned in to whisper in my ear. Grandma's mouth flapped open like a beached guppy's.
I'm not going to...
Aunt Jetty says that if you don't cut me some slack, she's going to visit your mother and tell her all about what you were doing in Edgar Oliver's back seat when you were supposed to be at Bible study. Ruthie blanched.
How could you? My mother's dead.
Yes, but Jetty can go over to the Half Moon Hollow Women's Clubhouse anytime she wants and visit Grandma Beebe. That's the way ghosts work. They can haunt wherever they choose, move from place to place. They even visit each other. Okay, that last part was a total bluff. Grandma Beebe was a sweet old lady who had no unfinished needlework, much less unfinished business, when she died. She moved into the light a long time ago, but Ruthie didn't know that. And I told her that so I could tell her this. Jetty's even visited Grandpa Fred a few times. He's haunting the golf course. Jetty cackled with glee as Ruthie's cheeks drained of color.
You tell her to stay away from my Fred.
Tell her yourself, Grandma. She can hear you. Much better, in fact, than she could in life. Besides, you're engaged. Why should you care? And I don't think he's your Fred anymore. Remember, till death do us part? He's dead. You've parted. Grandpa Fred's on the market again. Ruthie turned a sickly white under her artfully applied Elizabeth Arden powder.
You... lifeless Jezebel, you stay away from my Fred.
At this point, it seemed a moot point to note that Aunt Jetty had actually broken up with Grandpa Fred earlier this year to take up with Mr. Wainwright. Aunt Jetty, obviously enjoying Grandma's discomfort, seemed to think so, too.
They can't all be yours, though you certainly had more than your share,
Jetty scribbled out in surprisingly legible script.
Dried-up old maid,
Ruthie yelled.
Black widow,
the refrigerator spat back.
Unclean spirit,
Ruthie gasped.
Varicose-veined hoe,
Jetty scrawled, prompting an indignant gasp from Grandma.
I will not stand here in my daughter's home and be insulted,
Ruthie shrieked.
Jane, you tell your great-aunt that I will not set foot in River Oaks until she can keep a civil tongue in her skull, which, by the way, never had the bone structure I have, and she was always jealous.
She can... The door slammed in dramatic fashion. Hear you, I finished. Jetty slumped to the floor, clearly exhausted by her telekinetic efforts. That
was awesome, I marveled. Telling Grandma everything you've ever thought about her doesn't mean you have closure and you're moving on, does it? I was just getting used to having you around. Aunt Jetty reached up to stroke her transparent hand along my cheek.
No, I could have insulted Ruthie while I was living. I'm sticking with you, kiddo.
Lucky me, I chuckled. My relationship with Grandma is never going to change, is it? Aunt Jetty led me over to the swinging door, where my friends were crowded, listening.
No, baby, it's not. You and Ruthie have exactly the kind of relationship you want with each other. It was the same with us. Ruthie and I chose not to like each other. I'm not saying that's right, but it's the way things are. There's no law that says families have to be best friends. You can choose your own family, which you have. Of course, you can also choose to want a better relationship with people you were born to. It's up to you. Until then, sit at the fountain of my experience and learn Ruthie's weak points.
Varicose veined ho was one I hadn't heard before, I admitted as we pushed through the door, gently popping and eavesdropping Dick in the side of the head. Dick cursed. Aunt Jetty shrugged.
You leave the TV on during the day. I've watched a lot of Maury Povich.
Chapter 14. When you've taken all you can, walk away. Be the bigger person. Or at least find a bigger person and use your vampire strength on them. It's the sporting thing to do. Love Bites, a female vampire's guide to less destructive relationships. Given my history with my sister, it was inevitable, really, that we would end up wrestling in the mud, beating each other senseless with pieces of foam rubber. The Half Moon Hollow High parking lot was carefully organized into a carnival grid. Flaccid, half-inflated bouncy houses in the south quadrant, food booths in the east, and no fun to be had in either. At a normal Hollow charity carnival, the signs were hand-painted poster board affairs. The games consisted of tossing pool rings over 2-liter bottles or softballs into bushel baskets. You paid too much for a corn dog and a stuffed bear. You felt as if you contributed to your community. You went home. This Halloween hellhole involved professionally screen-printed signs and catered low-carb treats. I'd suggested a cotton candy machine, and Head Courtney gave me a look that would have vaporized lesser women. And forget any preconceived notions of streamers or balloons. This was strictly a Martha affair. Pumpkins, as far as the eye could see, artfully arranged with corn and various raffia accoutrements. God help us all. The spookiest thing about this extravaganza was all of the women in matching pink sweatshirts, manically scrambling to make the parking lot into a Halloween Casbah, each terrified that Head Courtney would find her efforts wanting and put her on cleanup duty. Given Head Courtney's less than enthusiastic response to the prize boxes I was unloading from Big Bertha, and the fact that the rest of the Courtneys had shunned me following my outing, I already knew who was going to be manning that stupid push broom all night. Gabriel had wanted to accompany me to the carnival, but I asked him not to come, just in case I ended up stuck in the dunking booth. I didn't want him to witness my humiliation. Fortunately, this carnival didn't have dunking booths, or clowns, which, for me, was another bright side. Andrea was covering the shop for me while I served my carnival sentence. She and Dick would have the place to themselves for the evening. Emery had announced his intentions to attend a Christian-themed haunted house called Hell House weeks before. Emery had been spending less and less time at the shop lately. Andrea hoped that meant he'd found a girl to go to prayer meetings with. We didn't have time to overanalyze that possibility, or to consider warning the girl, because we were expecting a big Halloween night crowd. Adults seeking a safely scary atmosphere. Teenagers looking for supplies to summon the Blair Witch. Having Emery standing in the aisles trying to hand the customers religious tracts would probably spoil the ambiance. Andrea was dressed up like Glinda the Good Witch, covered in pink sparkles from head to toe. The voluminous tulle skirt of her rented costume barely fit behind the coffee bar. Somehow, she'd managed to talk Dick into wearing a scarecrow costume. He looked like an extremely embarrassed Raggedy Andy doll and planned to stay in the stockroom for most of the night.
Quit trying to put off going to the carnival, Andrea had told me, filling a bowl with those rock-hard peanut taffy candies wrapped in orange wax paper. We'll be fine here. I'm going, I muttered, sliding into my Pepto-Bismol pink Chamber of Commerce sweatshirt. And I hope that you realize that as a witch, I am claiming double overtime for you making me work on a religious holiday, she said, gesturing to her girly ensemble. Watch it, or I'll drop a house on you, I sneered as I walked out the door. Since Jenny had yet to show up, Nice Courtney was helping me unload and distribute the prizes to various game booths. Zeb was pitching in, too, but I think he was just there to get first crack at the funnel cakes. Imagine how sad he was when he found out that this wasn't that kind of carnival. The closest thing he could get to junk food was a sugar-free caramel apple. Nonetheless, he'd promised to come running, yelling that Jolene was in labor and we had to leave right away if things got bad with the Courtneys. Well, it's still pretty much a high school parking lot, I said, hefting a box of free tote bags out of the trunk. But I'm sure after everything is inflated, it will be a magical autumn wonderland. Just keep telling yourself that, Nice Courtney snickered. Where do you want the popcorn balls? Wherever Head Courtney won't see them, I muttered, throwing a blanket over the individually wrapped offerings from the A&P. Don't you know this is a no-carb charity carnival? Nice Courtney giggled. I'll smuggle them to the kids under the guise of giving them their complimentary hand sanitizer. I've had a bad influence on you, I said, gasping in mock surprise. When I made my escape from the chamber, I hoped that Nice Courtney and I could keep in touch. If nothing else, she'd proven to me that just because people are shiny and preppy, that didn't make them automatically evil. It was entirely a matter of choice. She'd single-handedly undone a lot of damage that had been inflicted in high school. Jane, judging from the look on Jenny's face as she barreled across the parking lot, I guess she'd heard about my visit with Grandma Ruthie. And being Grandma's favorite and confidant, it was up to her to set me straight. Speaking of shiny and evil personal choices. Oh, what now? I muttered. Who do you think you are? Are you out of your mind, scaring Grandma like that? She yelled, her face only inches from mine. How could you do that to your own grandmother? Let me get this straight. You're yelling at me for my behavior during a conversation with Grandma Ruthie, in which Grandma Ruthie yelled at me for how I behaved during a conversation with you? I sighed. Do you two organize a be-a-pain-in-Jane's-ass schedule? She could have had a heart attack, Jenny insisted. Oh, please. Ruthie's an unstoppable force of nature, like the Black Plague or Richard Simmons. That's it, Jenny growled through her clenched teeth. Stay away from my family. Mama, Daddy, Grandma, the kids, everybody. You obviously don't care about us or what we think, so just stay away from us. I know you've been lobbying for this since the day I was brought home from the hospital, but you can't kick me out of our family, Jen, I told her. It's not our family, she spat. It's mine. Who the hell do you think you are? I cried. Oh, don't pretend you care about being a part of this family, she sneered, snagging a foam rubber combat hammer from the jousting game Head Courtney had banned from the midway. She jabbed it into my chest, backing me into the inflatable bouncy house. The giant clown head that hovered over the entrance leered down at me, and my latent coulrophobia forced me to change directions toward a muddy patch behind the staging area, but not before I was able to grab a foam weapon of my own. Jenny poked me again with the hammer. You've been waiting to get away from us for years. We're not smart enough for you, not sophisticated enough. Do you think we don't notice when you make your little jokes under your breath? You've wanted to get out of the hollow for years. Why don't you just go? We certainly don't want to keep you. How would you know that I want to leave? I demanded, smacking her arm with the foam. How the hell do you think you come close to knowing how I feel about anything? Jabbed to her chest. From our long heart-to-hearts? All those nights you came over to watch Sex in the City? Smack to her other arm. Do you realize that the last time you and I had a conversation that ranged beyond the weather and whatever misinformation Mama's fed you was at Aunt Jetty's funeral luncheon? And I think you'd had too many toddies to remember. Oh, you're just all about the open sisterly communication, aren't you? She landed a respectable blow to my face, knocking me on my butt into the mud. Considering my vampire strength and speed,
That was just embarrassing.
When have you ever made an effort to spend time with me? To get to know me?
She hit my head to punctuate each point.
Oh, no. You're just so freaking above it all. You couldn't bring yourself to stop sniping for 5 minutes and just be my sister. Boring old Jenny with her husband and kids. Lame Jenny who likes to play Pictionary with her friends on Friday nights. Silly little Jenny and her silly little hobbies.
You're mad because I won't scrapbook with you? I asked, dumbfounded, though I'm sure it was more from the ringing blow to my skull after she managed to rip the foam off the plastic bar that supported it. I shook it off and jumped to my feet.
Even when we were kids, you thought you were so much better than me, Jenny yelled, panting as we circled the mud pit.
A crowd had gathered, cheering us on.
I never had to worry about you copying me like a normal little sister. No, you wouldn't lower yourself to my level. I didn't like the right books. I didn't like the right music. I wasn't sarcastic enough for you. Not good enough for Jane. And then you get turned into a freaking vampire. I have to hear from Mama about your fabulous undead makeover, about your undead rights group and your 150-year-old boyfriend. How can I compete with that?
Each sentence was punctuated with an impressive smack upside my head. You're mad because I'm cooler than you? I guessed again, but Jenny was too worked up to notice I'd said anything. With a cry that would have made Xena proud, she swept my leg. My feet went flying out from under me, and I landed with a wet thwap on my back. She growled,
You're always saying that I'm the favorite, that you get treated like a child. You're always bitching about Mama bringing food over to your house and folding your laundry. Do you know how many times she's brought dinner over to my house? Twice, after each of the boys was born. I had to go through 23 hours of labor without drugs just to get a damn pot pie. You think Daddy ever drops by my house for a chat and some pizza? You think Mama calls me before I leave for work or checks on me at night when I'm home alone? No, because Jenny can take care of herself. She never needs any help, she cried, throwing her head back and screaming at the sky.
I used her distraction to knock her back on her butt and pummel her repeatedly. Jenny, on the other hand, had resorted to flinging mud at me. Literally.
Because you're perfect, I yelled,
throwing a glob of muck into her face. Do you think it was easy growing up with the Jenny Early as your older sister? Jenny spluttered as she spit the mud out and landed an impressive clump in my hair, considering that she couldn't see. Do you think I ever walked into a classroom where the teacher didn't say, Oh, you're Jenny Early's sister. We know what to expect from you. I have to live up to the example of a woman who color codes her underwear drawer. Jenny's so responsible. Jenny's house is always immaculate. Jenny cooked an entire Thanksgiving dinner and still had time to make place cards out of acorns and rice paper. Don't blame me because you've had to live up to your own hype. I pushed up onto my feet, scraping several layers of mud from my face. And frankly, I'm tired of hearing, Oh, that's just the way Jenny is, and she didn't do it to hurt your feelings. She just likes things a certain way. When have I ever hurt your feelings? She gasped, trying and failing to stand. She slumped to the ground and looked up at me, squinting through the blood and sweat dripping in her eye. Let's see. Holidays, birthdays, graduations, family dinners, baby showers, church functions, school plays. You put me at another family's table at your wedding reception, Jenny.
Because I didn't want Grandma Ruthie to drive you crazy with questions about when you were going to get married, Jenny protested.
And because I embarrass you, I said, wiping a clod of dirt from my cheeks.
You don't embarrass me. You annoy me.
You irritate me. You drive me up the damn wall, but... Okay, wait, the vampire thing that did embarrass me a little bit. But still, I don't hate you. Awkward silence. I looked into the future and saw the two of us fighting and sniping at each other like Grandma Ruthie and Aunt Jetty, though obviously I was immortal, ageless, and way hotter than septuagenarian Jenny. I didn't want that. I chose not to have that kind of relationship with her. But I didn't know how to fix it. Fortunately, Jenny did.
So, I hurt your feelings?
She asked, the corners of her mouth lifting slightly. Well, you don't have to look so dang pleased about it, I muttered.
I'm not. I didn't know I could have that effect on you, she admitted. You seem unflappable sometimes.
It's all a clever ruse, I said, blowing my bangs out of my face. I'm extremely flapped most of the time. Jenny wiped at her eyes.
but I think that had more to do with her impromptu facial than emotion.
You're going to outlive my boys, Jane, and their children, and their children. Don't you think I've thought of that? When my grandchildren are lying in the nursing home, you're going to be the one packing up everything they own and deciding who gets what. You're the sole survivor, no matter what any of us does. You're going to outlast us all. I think that's why I went so crazy about all those family heirlooms. I figured it's going to come to you in the end anyway, so why don't you let us just borrow it for a little while? And when you said no, I don't know what came over me.
To be honest, the stuff doesn't matter that much to me, Jenny. I just like to screw with you, and this seems like the only way to get you. I'm sorry I've been a little petty about the heirlooms. I just wish you would have told me things like this before, you know, I died, I offered. More awkward silence. What do we do now? I asked, hesitantly sitting next to her.
I don't know, she said, sinking back into the mud, clearly exhausted by her emotional unburdening.
You could stop being such a hag at every single family gathering, I suggested. She lifted her head to glare at me. Too soon? I asked. She nodded. Well, we could stop sniping at each other and focus our anger where it belongs, I said.
Mama?
Jenny asked. I nodded.
It won't be like this forever, Jenny promised, placing a tentative hand on my shoulder.
Yeah, I sniffled. Someday Grandma Ruthie will be locked safely away in a home for the elderly, criminally insane.
Jane?
I brightened. Can I pick the home?
Jane?
That wasn't a no.
This has been good, Jenny said, laughing. I feel lighter somehow.
It's amazing what a little foam battering can do, I said, nodding.
Well, it's a good thing we stopped where we did, 'cause I was this close to kicking your ass.
I nodded to the mutilated grass behind us. We can always jump back into the mud pit and settle things once and for all.
This is one of those things where I'm just going to assume you're joking.
I sniffed, wincing at the sting in my lip as it healed. Probably for the best. Jenny watched as my skin closed and the bruising faded away.
That is really cool.
Just one of the perks, I said, grinning as I pulled her to her feet. Head Courtney came running over to the foam and mud wreckage.
What do you think you're doing?
Just settling some family issues, Jenny chuckled, wiping a spot of blood from her nose.
I cannot believe you two. This is a children's carnival. You're ruining everything. Do you realize what you're going to have to do to work off this many demerits? Never in the history of the Chamber of Commerce.
Zeb came running up, frantic.
Jane, we've got to go. Jolene's mom just called. She's in labor.
Head Courtney seemed supremely annoyed at the interruption, but her laser beam gaze did not falter from its target. My head. Zeb, it's not a big deal. You don't really have to fake Jolene being in labor.
I'm not faking,
he screamed, his voice reaching an alarming soprano octave. Turning my back on Courtney, I forced Zeb to bend over and take some deep breaths. Zeb, calm down. Do you have the bag?
Yes, it's in the car. Jolene packed in June. She wouldn't let me help.
I reached to pat his shoulder, but when I saw how muddy my hands were, I pulled away. I think we can all agree that was a wise choice. How about I drive to the hospital?
No, I can handle it,
he said, showing me what he thought was a set of keys. Zeb, that's a pair of pliers.
Maybe you should drive,
he conceded.
Jane, where do you think you're going? Head Courtney thundered.
I'm not done with you yet. My friend is in labor. I'm going to the hospital.
I did not excuse you, Head Courtney shrieked. You still have duties here at the carnival. There are balloons to be blown up, garlands to be hung, lights to be strung.
My friend is in labor, I repeated very slowly. I'm going to be with her. Courtney put a restraining hand on my shoulder.
You are not leaving. Abandoning an assignment at a special event will result in an automatic suspension, Jane.
And then what? Detention? Expulsion? Firing squad? I don't have time for this. I'm leaving, I told her. Head Courtney turned an apoplectic purple.
If you walk out now, I'll assign you to scoop horse poop after every Founders Day parade for the next 20 years.
You know what, Courtney? I don't think I'm chamber material after all. So you can take your precious fall festival and shove it up your...
Jane, we've got to go,
Zeb yelled from the car. Dang it. I was really looking forward to that one. Courtney, I quit.
This is what I get for letting some filthy bloodsucker into the Chamber of Commerce, Courtney howled. We're going to destroy your bony, pasty ass. Do you understand me, you undead bitch? When we get done with you, you won't be able to sell so much as a...
I stepped forward, ready to belt head Courtney in the manner she deserved. But I was cut off by Jenny, who had cocked her fist back and knocked Courtney onto her ass into a crate full of stuffed SpongeBobs.
Jenny? I laughed, staring at her in surprise.
Nobody talks to my sister that way, Jenny said, rubbing her knuckles gingerly.
You talk to me that way, I pointed out. But that's different. I'm your sister. I'm allowed. But no one else is. Tears sprang into my eyes, and I threw my arms around her.
Thanks, sis.
Jenny stiffened, then relaxed and squeezed me back.
Oh, well, anytime.
Zeb cleared his throat.
I hate to interrupt this beautiful family moment, but my wife is having babies. Jane, get in the car.
We arrived at the hospital to find Mama Ginger attempting to wrestle her way past a formidable-looking nurse into the maternity ward. Unfortunately for Mama Ginger, the nurse was obviously a John Cena fan and maneuvered Mama Ginger into some sort of pretzel armlock position in which she was powerless. At the sight of his mother, Zeb stopped in his tracks and muttered several of the seven words you're not supposed to say in polite company.
How did she know Jolene was here? I demanded. I thought you said you weren't going to call her until a few days after the babies are home from the hospital.
I don't know, Zeb said, at this point on the cusp of tears. She must have staked out our house. I thought I saw her car driving up and down our road yesterday, but I told myself even Mama wasn't that crazy.
Obviously, you haven't paid attention for the last 30 or so years.
I've got to get to Jolene, Zeb said, his eyes scanning the hall wildly. If Mama sees me, I'll never get past her in time.
Calm down. This is why Jolene appointed me waiting room bouncer, I told him, because I'm willing to do things like this.
Like what?
Like this. I shoved Zeb behind the admissions desk, out of Mama Ginger's sightline. Mama Ginger! What are you doing? I called, waving excitedly. Mama Ginger whirled at the sound of my voice, no longer struggling with the hospital's linebacker. With Mama Ginger distracted, Zeb slunk around the admissions desk, behind her back, and into the maternity ward. She didn't look pleased to see me, but I did provide the excuse to complain about her treatment in a really loud voice.
This silly woman says they don't have a patient named Jolene Lavelle listed here, but I know she's here. I saw her mother's car out in the parking lot, she cried, her voice reaching hysterical levels.
Several nurses poked their heads into the hallway, but seeing who it was, they ducked back into the patient's rooms.
Jolene must be listed as a private patient, Mama Ginger, I said, keeping my voice soothing.
She shied away when I tried to loop my arm through hers, so I took her elbow and led her into the waiting room. That means the nurse can't tell you if she's here. It's against the law. When we walked into the waiting room, Jolene's entire pack was waiting there. It was fortunate that very few women in town seemed destined to have Halloween babies, because there would have been nowhere for their expectant families to sit. Jolene's aunts, uncles, and cousins were lounging on every available surface. Jolene's male relatives had that healthy, hearty, but blank look about them. Yes, they were nice to look at, but all hotness aside, I'd like to spend my time with someone who doesn't live his life according to the tenets set forth on Walker, Texas Ranger. The aunts were convened in a corner, eyes darting from one side of the room to the other, absorbing it all. They all seemed to be enjoying the novelty of the experience, with the exception of Aunt Vonnie, whose mouth was puckered and unhappy. Mimi and Lonnie McLean, the only McLeans who liked me, were pacing the room, their stances defensive and agitated. Lonnie McLean was picking a giant bouquet of carnations to shreds, but fortunately there were backups. It looked as if the babies were about to be coronated. The room was absolutely packed with flowers and stuffed animals. Half of the flowers were pink,
The other half were blue. They had teddy bears wearing tutus and bears wearing baseball uniforms. And a ham, which I guessed was gender neutral. Nothing like covering